Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey, Billy, why don't we tell them what we're about, man?
So we're here to welcome you to the Madhouse Chronicles. It's a talk show with myself, Billy Morrison.
And me, Ozzy Osbourne.
This man, Prince of Darkness. And we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Come and join Ozzy and myself. Visit osbournemediahouse.com to get special access to...
Come on!
What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
Prepare your ears, humans. Happy, Sad, Confused begins now.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Catherine Hahn on her comfort movie, E.T. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Sammy, I almost qualified that by saying the full title of the movie. Technically, it's E.T., the Extraterrestrial.
Yeah,
Do you think I confused listeners by just saying E.T.? Are they now like, what is he talking about, that weirdo?
Well, you said it just now, so I think they had a second of freaking out, but now they're okay.
So what percentage of the listenership dropped out after hearing just E.T. and was like, what?
75.
Well, hello to the three of you left. I'm Josh.
Yeah, they stuck for the Cate Blanchett Chinese film.
Hey.
But when you just said E.T., they were out.
You better check that movie out if you want some culture in your life, Sammy.
Yeah, I do. That's what I need.
Mm-hmm. I'm Josh. That's Sammy. This is a podcast called Happy, Sad, Confused, where I talk to actors and filmmakers currently about their favorite comfort movies in this rejiggered, weird new format for Happy, Sad, Confused in our lovely new world. And like I said, I'm happy to say that Catherine Hahn, if you want to go really classy, is the returning guest on Happy, Sad, Confused. And she is a delight, Sammy.
I love her.
Who doesn't love Catherine Hahn? She is a breath of fresh air in these dark times. When I saw her face zooming from across the country, it just filled me with joy. Unlike right now, the kind of sense of dread I feel when I stare at you.
Yeah, this is awful.
But
look off in the distance.
Catherine, you know, of course, from she's great in everything. Step Brothers, Transparent. Whenever she pops up in a film or on TV, you know it's going to be good. And certainly, she fulfills that promise with a couple new projects. She's got the new HBO miniseries. I know this much is true.
Yes,
you're going to watch that one, Sammy. It's a little dark.
Yeah. I was going to say, give it to me. I like it. I get dark and depressing right now.
Well, that's perfect. It's perfect. Yeah. A six-part miniseries based on the best-selling book starring Mark Ruffalo as twins. And Catherine Hahn, I'm only halfway through the series. As of now, only one role for Catherine, sadly. But, I mean, who knows what happens in the second half of the series.
I didn't know that Mark plays twins, so I feel like you spoiled that.
It's not like a big reveal. It's not a Shyamalan twist. It's right from the get-go.
He's got a twin brother.
She is also, if a dark brooding adaptation of a novel is not your speed, well then check out Central Park on Apple Plus at the end of the month. It is a musical cartoon.
Oh.
Josh Gad, Kristen Bell, a ton of great talented performers. It's from the folks that brought you Bob's Burgers. I also checked out a few of those episodes in our alternate timeline. I was moderating the Q&A for that one at South by Southwest. Never happened, but I'm glad I got a chance to catch up with Catherine and talk to her about that those projects, but also E.T., which is just a stone cold classic. You know it. Everybody loves it. If you have a brain and a heart, you love E.T. And she was really insightful and thoughtful and emotional talking about what she loved about the movie, from the performances, from the music, all the aspects that resonated with her and it hit her at the right time as a kid. And now she's exposed her own kids to it. So this was a really great chat and a really good excuse to catch up with her. So I'm glad we made it happen.
I don't know. I'm so sorry to interrupt you.
No, please.
I don't think children should watch that movie.
Oh, that's interesting. Wait, by children, do you have a cutoff point? Or do you just view all children in the same bucket?
I was so traumatized by E.T. as a child. I had a vision of his little head going up from, like, I would be in my bed and I would see his head rise up from the side of my bed. You know how, like, it goes up and down?
Yeah.
And, like, I had a full panic attack on the ride with my mom.
What's to do with E.T. than the ride?
No,
because your own psyche.
Because he was supposed to be in the basket in front, and I was so fucking scared of him.
Okay.
That his head would pop out of the little basket that we had to get off the ride.
And this is 2 years ago.
This was 6 months ago, right before Disney closed. But then I rewatched the movie in my 20s, and I was like, oh, I get it. It's not so bad.
No, but you're right. And we actually discuss, not in those crude terms, like you're like the mouth of a sailor, a trucker, but in more eloquent terms, Catherine and I discussed how, yes, it is traumatic. Maybe is the wrong word, but it's traumatic. Traumatic is the right word for kids, because it is about loss and death and big emotions. And if you are not crying by the end, then something's wrong with you. And I think it's a profound movie for kids, and of course it works for us as adults. If you still have the child within, you know, I have embraced my child within, Sammy.
Yeah, you've yet to embrace your adult. One
of these days. Uh-huh. Let's hear a few other comfort movies from the listeners out there. I ask every week for you guys to send in your own picks for your comfort movie. As always, you can send them to my Twitter handle with the hashtag #MyComfortMovie, #HappySadConfused. This is Abby Hiddleston. I don't believe that's your given name, Abby.
Unless
the whole Hiddleston family is a fan of Happy Sad Confused, which I guess is possible. Abby chooses Raising Arizona. Great call. Keely McNabb says Weekend at Bernie's.
Oh.
Ooh, twist.
That's a fun one.
Elizabeth Smith takes it old school with Singing in the Rain. Great pick.
Lovely.
James McTavish says Father of the Bride. We'll never know. Is it the original or the remake? Is it both? James, clarify.
We'll never know. Follow up.
Kelly Thurman says When Harry Met Sally. These are all fine picks. I support all of the listeners and their great taste. So that's my comfort movie. Other things to mention. I want to mention that I got a busy week of Josh Horowitz content for you on MTV and Comedy Central. An Embarrassment of Riches on Comedy Central. Stir Crazy, my comedy talk show, continues with a cast of Reno 911. That new episode is up by the time you hear this. It is awesome. The show, they're just amazing improv artists. So as you can imagine, they're hysterical. And then later on this week, very soon, you'll be able to hear my conversation with Alexandra Daddario, another former guest of Happy, Sad, Confused. And she is, of course, delightful as well. Over on the MTV side, I'm starting to do these Instagram Live interviews, Sammy.
Do you know what that is?
Actually, I've never done it. It's okay. You know me too well. I have never done an Instagram Live. So guys, you should check these out, if for no other reason, to see if I can pull this off.
I will.
So I'm stealing MTV News's Instagram account for the duration of these chats. And like I said, I'm just praying I don't mess everything up. But yes, tomorrow, or actually we're taping this on Tuesday, but as if you hear this on Wednesday when the episode drops, later on today, I'm talking to Beanie Feldstein at 5 p.m. on Wednesday Eastern Time. That will be great. Her new movie is How to Build a Girl. And then on Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, I'm talking to Skylar Astin about Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. So really excited to catch up with
them. Two really talented people.
Way more talented than I won't speak for you, but we both know.
I mean...
But certainly more talented than I. Who knows? Maybe we'll break out into song. Hopefully them, not me.
Yeah, one-sided song breakout. You can do spoken word.
How's your Friday Night Lights viewing, Sammy?
Really good. We're in... We're deep in it. I moved through... I was just telling you, I forgot like when the writer's strike was. So the transition from season 2 to 3 was very jarring.
Right.
Like I thought I missed... like 5 episodes, and I freaked out.
Are you enjoy? Do you miss the New York sirens? Can you hear them where you are?
That was nice.
Sammy? Yeah,
that's nice.
That's New York character good. For you. I like to bring a little bit of real life into the podcast.
I heard earlier there's like someone was mowing their lawn out there, and I was like, "Whoa, what is that noise?"
Yeah, you've got dogs and you're Americana, and I am in an urban hellscape. So. It works for both of us, I suppose. Well, enjoy your continued first watch of Friday Night Lights, which
is... Hey, that Riggins guy is pretty hot, huh?
The Kitsch? You're a fan of the Kitsch?
Yeah, I get it now.
What red-blooded man, woman, child is not a fan of the Kitsch?
That's true. Even the dog loves the Kitsch.
He's a special, special individual. Okay, enough priddle prattle. Is that a word? Priddle prattle?
Nope.
I just made it up. I hope you guys enjoy this conversation with Catherine Hahn talking about her favorite comfort movie, E.T., Extraterrestrial. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to Happy, Sad, Confused. Spread the good word. Use the hashtag Happy, Sad, Confused. Use the hashtag My Comfort Movie. And without any further ado, here's me and Catherine. I'm happy to see a familiar face and hear a familiar voice. It's Catherine Hahn. It's good to see you, Catherine.
Hi, friend. Good to see you.
Oh, my gosh. Crazy times, crazy times. But it's good to
in
see
our
reassuring.
Zoom boxes.
Yes. We're talking in our Zoom boxes. You've been, I don't know if it's any weirder than being in my office, to be fair. At least you get to be in the comfort of your own home this way.
No, right, exactly. I don't have to look at your amazing knickknacks, although they're very distracting, but you've got quite a lot of knickknacks in there.
As you can see in my home, I actually don't have many knickknacks in the
home.
No! It's all in the office.
That's kind of amazing that you have a place to put them.
Thank God.
No, you've got a very minimal decor. I love it.
Yeah, well, my wife doesn't really support my stupid ways.
So maybe your office is... Oh, I see.
That's my respite.
Maybe... Sure. Okay.
So how are you, let's just get a lay of the land on how you're holding up. What have you settled into a new normal? Like, is there a normal yet? Like, is there a routine for you in this new world right now?
I can't even form a sentence. I mean, it's bananas. I mean, we are definitely living in the upside down.
Oh, you're freezing up.
The kids, they're both in different schools. I mean, we're just filled with gratitude and also like paralyzed with what we can possibly do. Like there's this, you know, you wake up and it's 4:30 the next day. It feels like the days go so fast. Like time feels very strange. We go through, it's the four of us and our two dogs. So we've gone through quite, as everybody's family sure, I'm sure have gone through quite some journeys together, some emotional journeys. Weirdly, we just saw The Lighthouse and I was like, oh God, claustrophobic, what an amazing, maybe not the best movie to watch in quarantine, but what an incredible movie. But
a true movie for our times, yeah, about being bundled together
Who
in a tight space.
Would have thunk it? I know.
At least you don't have Willem Dafoe next to you. I mean, that character at least.
I mean, I would love to have Willem Dafoe next to me, but maybe not the character. But we're holding up.
You are passing the time by you're still acting because I've seen your masterwork, Glengarry Glen Ross, and you've employed the entire family.
My vocal work?
I mean, it was so. For those that don't know, how did this happen? This was like with you did it with Dolls. You kind of recreated was
American Girl Dolls.
Oh, sorry,
yeah, my daughters, clear. Please. My daughter, my friend Matt Chackman, who runs the Geffen Theater. Out in Los Angeles was trying to, you know, he started this thing called the Geffen Stayhouse, which is like another, like, a theater artist or whatever would be able to every week put something on, you know, internet for people to enjoy and keep reminding us that the theater still exists. And to support those theaters, if anyone, you know, just a reminder that they're around. And so that this was something we just came up with, my family and I, we just made us laugh. And it took like 2 seconds. And also my behind the scenes, a lot of tension. My son was a very reluctant DP and cameraman. he did not want to do it, but my daughter was very excited to swear.
I was going to say, did she actually get to utter the, I mean, that's
oh,
as profane
yeah.
a play
really?
As there
Geffen
is.
Geffen didn't want to hear it, but we really, she tore up a, she, yes, of course.
She grew up overnight, thanks to David Mamet and you.
Not that she hadn't been hearing those words plenty,
right?
In this lockdown, but she definitely has heard plenty of language. They came out real fast and easy. No, it's coming out. Yeah,
So you're saying the Hahn household basically usually sounds like a David Mamet play on any day, especially given the lockdown. It's going.
I would say that's pretty pretty accurate, Josh.
As you know, we're going to get into one of our favorite comfort movies, but I do want to mention that thankfully in this dark time, we can at least enjoy the Summer of Han. I'm calling it the Summer of Han because we have a lot going on.
It doesn't trip off the tongue, but I'm going to take it.
It's the best I could do.
It's really good. I so appreciate it. I'm so flattered. What am I crying?
They're on two different ends of the spectrum. There's something for everybody in the Summer of Han, I'm thankful to say. We've got Central Park.
Yes.
Central Park is delightful. It's from the Bob's Burgers folks, which you obviously have an association with. And I assume that's how this one came about, this animated series.
Yeah, Lauren Bouchard, amazing Lauren Bouchard, who I love. And then he co-created with Josh Gad, who's also like, I mean, that crazy, talented, amazing human. And I knew it was going to be a musical, which was really compelling to me. And then I saw the rest of the cast and I was like, what are you talking about? So just to be in the same sentence with some of those people is hilarious to me, but the music is incredible. Like incredible. And it's, I'm really humbled to be in that same company for sure.
As somebody that grew up just, a stone's throw from Central Park, I can tell you it's a near documentary. It's basically exactly, but it is kind of a love letter to Central Park. I enjoyed it on that level.
Yeah.
And then on the totally other end of the spectrum is HBO's miniseries of I Know This Much Is True, which is based on a bestseller, of course, and got quite a pedigree from that. That's Mark Ruffalo playing not one, but two roles. Mm. And Derek Cianfrance, who I've always been a fan of.
Yeah, me too.
What's his method? He seems like all his stuff is so loose and seemingly improvisatory. Does it feel like a different kind of
It was pretty improvisatory as much as it could be. I mean, his adaptation is so beautiful, I think. And the original, the source material by Wally Lam is a pretty incredible piece of writing as well. I was a huge fan of his as well and a huge fan of Blue Valentine. I knew that it was going to be kind of an actor's like dream. And also to work with Mark, who I had never worked with before, but boy, I just think he's magnificent. And I just knew that he was going to just go so all in on this. And it was really a privilege to watch. So yeah, I would say it's like performance forward, you know, performance is favored over anything else. It's just like the dreamiest. Yeah, the dreamiest for an actor.
So Blue Valentine is not your comfort movie, nor is it mine, though I love that movie. If that's your comfort movie, that says something about your dark, sad soul, I think.
I love that person, though, if that's a comfort movie.
It's a complex individual. Yeah, I
get
it. So we have kind of shifted the focus of the podcast in recent weeks because we're all looking for a little bit of comfort, a little bit of escapism. Mm. I asked you for a few titles, and one jumped out at me because it's a comfort movie for so many. It certainly hit me at the right time. Mm. Tell us your comfort movie, Catherine.
When I had thrown at you, and the first one that came out, was E.T. And for me, I mean, I remember seeing that movie when I was, I don't know, but I know I was around my son's age, maybe a little bit younger. And I just remember the feeling of, first, it felt like an opera. That score is so gorgeous. I cannot hear it without wanting to burst into tears. And it just feels, there's something about it that just feels, it's so nostalgic, A. B, just seeing him in that red hoodie at the end, and if you just want to cry, a good ugly cry, like just a cathartic, beautiful cry, it's the most gorgeous. Dee Wallace is the coolest mom in the world with that cat suit on. a young, amazing Drew Barrymore with those amazing pigtails with the thick, I always remember the thick yarn bows. Like there's so much of it that just like takes me immediately back to the time when I was a young person. And it just, there's something very, and it was like just on that brink of becoming a grown up. Like that, he just was able to capture that so well, Spielberg, that Mr. Steven Spielberg. And, I just thought it was like, in my mind, it was like the perfect movie, like beginning to end, like from the beginning when that orchestra starts to the end, when you hear that like, dum, dum, dum. Like it's like the whole thing as a whole just destroys me. I've seen it many times.
Oh, yeah. Who hasn't? Yeah. I mean, I coincidentally took my nieces, who I think the oldest was 9, a few months ago here in New York, it was playing at a theater downtown, and to see it on the big screen again. And it just works. It works. It's a timeless, it's like our Wizard of Oz of the last 40 years, probably. It's one of those that will always work.
For sure.
So talk to me about, I did do the math. I think you were probably 8 if you saw it when, on its first run. So you were somewhere.
I was going to say I was 17.
You were 36 just last year. No. So you were somewhere between Gertie, Drew Barrymore, and Henry Thomas, Elliot.
Yes. Mm.
Do you remember were you relating to both of them, one of them? Did you see yourself in one of those kids, you think?
I mean, I think I probably saw myself. I think that Elliot reminded me so much of my brother. Like, he looks like my brother, my younger brother. And so I think I threw myself right in there. I definitely wasn't Gertie. I wanted to protect. I definitely didn't find myself in Gertie's storyline. But I cared for Gertie deeply. But there's like, my parents sat behind me. I think I just remember being able to sit with a couple of friends in the row in front of them. And that felt very big to me. And I don't think I had like cried watching a movie before. And I just remember feeling like, I mean, when he is crying also over the kind of body of E.T. in the thing, you know, in the refrigerator or whatever, the refrigerator with the cutout.
Right, exactly.
I just remember birthday. I mean, I don't think I'd ever like connected that much to a movie either. Like that I had felt, that I'd felt it that strongly. Like yeah. as a viewer, and that idea of, it's also so awesome to talk about this now. Like just the idea of sitting in a theater with people, and feeling that together was like, I just remember it being like a real kind of, I don't want to say religious, but it was like, I just remember it as being a really deep moment for me seeing that movie the whole way through, like, plant dying. Like I still see, like there's images that is like, I will never, that are just going to be in here till I die. Like those, there's, that are so deep in there. It just feels like this, it just feels so safe. I mean, I remember just like every time I would see, when I first moved out to LA and I didn't know what a termite, you know, when people would have to tent their houses for termites.
Right.
And I'd always be like, oh, it's like the ET house. Like, cause I would always think of like the house shrouded in the thing with the tubes coming out.
Oh, I don't know about you. That was the traumatic thing for me growing up. I will always remember that scene where they come in like the astronaut like outfits and it's like, what is even happening?
And I was always like, why did they have to do that? Like, why do they have to come in like that? Like, did they really have to have that mask on that you couldn't even see through? Like, he really knew how to push buttons. Because like that was always a very terrifying, you're right, it was terrifying. Terrifying.
Well, it is.
Like, where was the room in their house to put that whole triage center? Now I'm starting to
preparing
really
for
critique
the
it, but no, I can't.
No, but I think you're hitting on all the right the things that resonated with me when I watched it again for the probably 50th time the other day. But like, I could only imagine how so many kids also first started to grapple with like loss. Because like, you're seeing death and you're seeing him say goodbye to a friend. It's like all these kind of things that are so that we never get over, but especially if it hits you at 5 or 6 or 8 or 10, that's just, we're still figuring out what that even means to lose someone.
And the idea of being a parent and wanting to protect your child from that inevitability of just like what real life is and what pain is and heartbreak. And it's just, it always to me feels like that edge when he's just standing there looking up and seeing it going away. It's always like the edge. It just feels like it's like the precipice of like the end of childhood. Like
right.
There's
end
like a,
innocence.
That is,
yep. Yep.
Yeah, an innocence. And it's not bad. It's just truth. Like there's like, he's like, it's like the light has just been, you know, it's like the curtains have just been pulled away. There's, it's not like it's not like a horrible thing. It's just what it is. And that's why I think it's so fucking moving that he ends on that little fucking gorgeous face. Like it really just kills me. I want to cry thinking about it.
Don't cry now.
What am I doing?
You're doing enough crying
I'm
in recent
so
weeks,
on the verge
probably.
I know. All the time, verge of tears.
But another thing you mentioned that I do think like one of the MVPs of this film, and there's so many to go around, but John Williams obviously is always amazing. Mm. But the score, you're right. The beginning, it's about, like I timed it. It's basically a silent 8-minute sequence in the beginning when it's just, we see E.T., you know, the ship leaving and the boots of the scientists in the mud. Yeah. That's kind of the operatic opening. And then the ending is another probably 5-10 minutes of nearly silence, you know, very sparse dialogue between E.T. and Elliot and just letting John Williams do his thing. It's just transcendent.
It's transcendent and how it builds and the rush of, I mean, I remember going to back here, you know, Universal when they used to have the E.T. ride. Do you remember that? Did you ever do that at Universal Studios?
Yeah.
You know, that's just even that music when he finally goes up into the air with them. Like, I mean, the like exhilaration, like the, and just being with your pals, like that idea of freedom, like of finally being able to like be with your pack of buddies, like on bikes and having that like taste of like, of total autonomy, like, and summer and possibility, like that all of those things in one movie, he captured that all, and also responsibility with it. Like that they weren't just fucking around. They had like a mission. Like it was just like, anyway, perfection.
I think it also, no, that's what this is for. So it also really captures, and we should get into some of the performances, because you mentioned Dee Wallace, who's awesome, but I love Peter Coyote too. Like Peter Coyote, who you don't see the face of until like an hour in, as the, he doesn't have a name even, but he's just so decent. Like this, it's so not what you expect in a movie like that. You expect this like mustache twirling villain to come in towards the end, and he was Elliot as a kid. He says, like, he came to me too. It's just, you know, he's always grown up.
Oh, God. Yes, I remember feeling the same way I felt about, and this is maybe a weird, this is a very weird parallel, but I remember feeling the same way about that kind of character in Harvey Keitel in Thelma and Louise.
No, totally.
Where you feel like there's somebody that you know that they are kind of an antagonist, but you want them, you feel their heart, and because I just remember feeling that in that performance as well, and I so appreciate that as a viewer, and that's a real hard tone to find, and a relationship to find. Because I mean, I remember as a kid kind of wanting Dee Wallace and Peter Coyote to get together. I was like, is it going to happen? Is it going to happen? Like, it was just like enough of it, but I was like, they would be the best. You would be such an amazing dad. Like, but I think that is such a beautiful thing to find.
Well, it's also, I mean, it's also about, the film is about an absent father. It's like, if you know, it's really a film also about divorce. And while we never see or hear the dad, there's that looming presence of dad in Mexico with his new girlfriend. You know? And so I kind of get like your instinct to be like, oh wait, there's the new family unit.
Yeah.
We can make it all work again.
Yes. And they're even kind of posed together at the end around the circle with the, but yeah, I mean, I also, that's Dee Wallace also in that, because when I saw it again recently, well, they did a big, this was a few years back, but the Hollywood Bowl did a live, you know, they did one of those like John Williams, like live.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah.
Performing while we got to watch it. And, I mean, first of all, Dee Wallace in that cat suit, just forget it, that was her Halloween costume. She also kind of turns into another woman in that scene. It's so interesting, like a different side of mom comes out in that scene, which I remember as a kid being like, ooh, like what's happening? Like she just gets a little flirty and a little like she really puts on that outfit and like something else is happening to that mother. There's also like first of all, her face, her love for him, for all of them, but also her like amazing 80s hands offness, which is like so incredible. Like the thermometer scene.
Oh, the thermometer scene. I don't know about you. I literally tried that when I was a kid.
I tried it for sure.
Putting the thermometer up against like a light bulb, see if you can get it to go above and make yourself, you know, stay at home. Yeah, that was classic.
Yes, but I would never have been able to sit. My parents, I mean, you know, that's what she had to do, but she got to spend he got to spend an entire day. I mean, it's pretty amazing. The kind of like surrogate parents, those kids kind of had, like they already had, like they had a lot of responsibility too. Like they, I mean, they were, you know, the classic like 80s latchkey kids. Like I think I also kind of felt really seen. as a kid when I saw that movie.
I want to mention some of the basics, not that anybody doesn't know everything there is to know about E.T., but just for those that don't remember. So
extraterrestrial.
That's all I needed. That's all I was going to mention. Spoiler, it's about an alien. Thanks, Catherine.
I'm sorry.
It came out June 11th, 1982. Of course, directed by Steven Spielberg, written by Melissa Matheson. Mm. We mentioned a lot of the cast already. Dee Wallace, Peter Coyote, the kids. We should get into the kids a little bit more. So it's Henry Thomas as Elliot, Robert McNaughton as Michael, and Drew Barrymore as Gertie. And I think that... you kind of alluded to this also. I think it does capture not only the fraternity of kind of like the boys club of that kind of group of friends, but even among siblings. Like, I buy them as siblings. And I also really always appreciated that, like when I was watching it the other day, I'm like, he calls him like penis breath at one point. It's like they talk like kids talk. They're not sanitized versions of kids.
No, or just like random swears, right? Exactly. And then that they're like alliances again, like together and apart, like that felt very real to me. Yep. Like when Gertie's in on it and when she's not, and the older brother, like it's perfect that Elliot is the middle child.
He's kind of lost in the shuffle. He's not being
lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, exactly.
And that I still thinking about Drew Barrymore's performance also in that, and I know it's been held up to and you know in such high regard as an incredible like child's performance, right. But I mean I just think it's an incredible, she's just so incredible in that movie, like I mean just alive, all of them, and I all three of them together, and the older brother is great. I can't remember his name.
It's Robert McNaughton, in the character of Michael.
Okay.
And I think you're right, because like it sells E.T. Well, as good an animatronic and a puppet as whatever E.T. was, you don't believe it unless they are like invested and are crying their eyes. Like it's like,
yes,
it's the reaction shots that make E.T. work.
Yes, exactly. Didn't I remember hearing that there was like a, I wonder how they shot it with those kids, but like, I mean, I remember reading something about it, about how he would work with them, but.
Yeah. And like it's well known also, like they talk about how he shot a lot of the film kind of literally from a low angle, from their perspective, very much putting the viewer, whether subconsciously or consciously, in their shoes a bit.
Yes.
But like, and I'm sure you've worked with tons of kids over the years, like that it must just make it all the more, you appreciate for you as an actor, all the more like, how they got these kind of performances, because
absolutely.
This doesn't happen.
And you just feel it now, like looking back and because I mean, I just held that this movie is like you were saying, like Wizard of Oz. Like I never would even think about it on like a craft level because it was just kind of existed in this other plane in my memory. But it is so interesting to think about just like such a small cast, probably set up in some house, probably not the most complicated shoot. Like the kind of intimacy that he was able to get with those three is, it must have been very, very precious, an experience and shoot for them. Cause that kind of vulnerability is like, it's pretty rare to see in children.
And also just to think about the context of where this came, like in Spielberg's career, like this was his follow-up film to Raiders of the Lost Ark. And there are no name actors in this. Like Peter Coyote, maybe, I don't know, did people know, maybe they knew him slightly, but probably not. This is kind of like him putting his chips on the table, like the confidence that Spielberg had as a storyteller and telling a story with Dee Wallace as your lead actor. I mean, that's not, it's kind of amazing.
And also, I mean, we didn't even talk about like how visually this movie has inspired so many other things. Like one of my favorite photographers is this man, Gregory Crutzen, but I remember when I first would see those photographs, like every photograph, you feel like you're in those, you know, that shot of the backyard that kind of feels like a backyard, but also like somewhere in a plane, like you can't quite see where the neighbors are. You're like in the middle of nowhere. There's that shed with the light coming out, and there's that one shot of him just in the lawn chair, like holding out I used to call them Reese's Pieces, by the way, too.
They couldn't, apparently M&M's made the worst mistake of their lives, but they came to M&M's first and they're like, no thanks. Bad call.
That's
bad call, Eminem.
A horrible call, Eminem's.
But you're right. It was my vision. I grew up in New York City. That was like my vision of suburbia. Like literally, like, oh, that's what it is. And maybe to a degree it is. Spielberg did that. He defined that in a number of films. Like that's like the so-called Amblin film. Some he directed, yes. Some he didn't. But like he really captured middle America suburbia. Like, no, like he defined it for a generation.
Well, this was more like, to me, it was almost more like, it was like that idea of that California cul-de-sac.
Right.
That cutout cul-de-sac it would be kind of cut into the middle of basically a mountain range, so that your backyard was literally like you felt they were like suburban pioneers. So you just feel like you had nothing but woods and roads behind you, and it was just like nothing. But then in the front was this very like cookie cutter neighborhood, these yep. really nice houses, like suburbia, but like your backyard was still like the Wild West. And I feel like that was such an I always felt very grabbed by that too as a kid watching that, to feel, because there's still something in your backyard, there's still like mystery, there's still like
sure
something to explore. Like it's not everything is you know, not everything is known yet. Like there's so much unknown as a kid.
I assume your kids have seen this film by now. Do you remember showing this to them? Did it work for them? Or
yeah.
Do you as a parent like know instinctually like what age to show a film? Like, is that always a debate? Like when the right time is to show?
You know what? It had been, and we had been really conscious about it until, you know, deep into this where we were like, I was like, I kind of can't watch another kids movie for a while. And then, so we've started a little bit of an awesome movie camp, but they're definitely watching movies that are probably wildly inappropriate for them. Hence my daughter's probably appetite for swearing. I'm kidding. But I mean, it's been interesting to show them movies that are like, you know, just, you know, great movie. Yeah. Cause I remember when I was like, my son's 13, 14, but I remember seeing like some pretty intense stuff when I was that age. And
totally. I'm defined by that. I'm scarred, but also marked by that. That's why I love movies, is I was probably exposed to a bunch a little bit too early, but that's how I kind of learned about the world.
Yes. Right. Exactly.
So some random fun facts to mention. This was interesting, I found. So you mentioned the scene where we lose E.T. We think E.T. is lost to us. Those are actual like emergency room doctors that Spielberg put in that scene. He just wanted a little bit of authenticity and kind of the back and forth.
Oh, that's so interesting. That's amazing.
Do you know Harrison Ford was in the movie? That he was cut out of the movie?
No.
He was
He
was like the principal. I think we can hear his voice actually in the school
scene. The frog scene?
I think that's him.
Oh my God. Also one of the most romantic kisses.
It is. It's juxtaposed, of course, with this great scene from a John Wayne film. And the music soars.
And the music soars. I forgot about that part. Yes.
Yeah.
And E.T., when they start to... Oh my God, I have another tidbit, but I'll tell you in a second. But
okay. Don't go for it. I want your tidbit.
No, but like I there's also that like mind meld part that I have thought of in other scenarios that I have things that I've worked on or other things like creatively, like that, you know, that idea, I feel like where their minds are melded at that moment.
Right.
Like what that connection between the two of them is also so mysterious and so gorgeous.
Yeah.
You're right. That swirling music and the...
Well, no, you were, but it's, that line when the doctor is talking to the brother and he's like, E.T. thinks his thoughts, and the brother's like, no, he feels his feelings. That's the connection.
His feelings.
You know? Yeah. Okay. So here's some semi-rapid fire or not kind of questionnaires. So for you, the best performance in this film, who would you give the award, your favorite performance in the film?
I mean, everybody's amazing, but I think Henry Thomas is just like incredible. That face looking up at the end. But like close seconds, Dee and Drew.
Yeah. What's the best scene in the film for you? We've mentioned a few. What's the one that will always stand out?
The one that just came to me is when he is crying again, the refrigerator scene where he's crying over him, and then the light comes in and you see that he's okay. But that, like the music, the combination of the music, his face, his performance, and then the surprise of E.T. still being alive, even though you know and you're hoping as an audience member, the fact that exactly when it comes at that rush of music has just always been goosebumps for me. Yeah. And perfect.
When I was in the theater watching with my niece, she moved next to me. She like came close to me. She's like, is he really dead? I'm like, it's okay. It's okay. Wait, it's going to be okay. Yes. I had to reassure her.
Yeah, of course. It's horrifying.
Should there be, this is a big one, because most films, as you know now, get a sequel, a franchise, a remake, something. Is this hallowed ground? Should there ever be a remake, sequel, anything to E.T.?
I think this is hallowed ground, Josh. I really do. It's like, because also it's so perfect in, like you were saying, it is so perfect in its, in exactly where the time that it was made in, like that we still are able to put so much onto this puppet of E.T. and invest so much in this that now we look at and would, and clearly it's a rubber doll laying in a river with like white stuff on it.
Right.
But like, it's the whole world and that, and E.T. is dying and he's left, you know what I mean? He's left in the creek with the like white, they put the white on him to make it look like white. But like, I think that, that's the magic of it is that it is, it's so in our, for those of us that are older, like it's so in our DNA, as like childhood. And I think it would just, it would talk about an end of innocence if you tried to remake it, for sure.
Yeah, unless it's about Peter Coyote and Dee Wallace hooking up, in which case that
happy with that. Yes, I wanted them to be mom and dad.
Is there a movie that you can think of that would be a good double feature with E.T.? Let's program an E.T. double feature.
Oh,
come to mind.
I mean, oh, you know what? Well, this would be like there's a couple ones I would suggest. One is that I would suggest District 9. Because I know that's really weird, but I think that there is something between that relationship, between the because there is, again, there's something that you are invested in something. I just, that journey felt very similar. This right. is not a children's double feature, although I did show my 13-year-old that and he loved it. But that relationship between that father alien and his son is also pretty, like, you feel it.
Sure.
And that's hard to do. Again, that was hard to do. I love the performance of the main character in that.
That was unexpected, but I like it. I would say just don't do Mac
Close
and
Encounters.
Me. Have you ever seen Mac and Me? Mac and Me's the ripoff, of course. That's the one.
I don't remember Mac and Me.
I don't know if I've ever seen it, but do you know that's like Paul Rudd's like go-to clip on phone-in.
Yes, exactly.
It was basically infamously the E.T. ripoff that was basically sponsored by McDonald's. It was literally like a commercial for McDonald's.
Big Mac and Me. I would also, I would say Close Encounters would also be really interesting just to hear, I mean, if you wanted to go that perspective of just seeing like, of this, a similar terrain as it were that Spielberg was exploring.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Spielberg at the height of his powers. Not that he's lost that many steps, but he's
not at all.
Okay, I'm going to let you go, Catherine. I do want to mention not only Central Park, and I know this much is true. You, by the way, have made some comfort movies for all of us. Step Brothers is obviously a comfort movie for many.
Yes, for sure. No, there is something just to like sit back and watch some anarchy and those genius two gentlemen that I've seen it again since I've been in this with my children.
And I think a new addition to the comfort movies is Spider-Man. Spider-Man's probably a new people are loving that one. So we'll talk again soon, hopefully in better times. Hopefully we'll talk about these projects. I want to pester you more about WandaVision. Did you guys finish WandaVision at least before all this madness?
There's some bits to be done, but we were lucky enough to get but there's some stuff.
Okay, can't wait to see that one. I'm glad this gave us an excuse to catch up and distract ourselves
from the world outside. It's so good to see your face. Same. Yeah, exactly. And to just like wax about this movie for a second was medicinal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Always, Catherine.
All right.
I'll talk to you soon.
Please take care.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.